continue now with the tale of Rav Baruch, the father of the Alter Rebbe, and how he became a chosid. You will remember that Rav Baruch's parents passed away when he was but 14 years old, and he couldn't find any consolation, and he wandered from city to city for 3 years, and he finally ended up in Lozhne. And for a period of time during the summer, he acted as a watchman in the orchard of Rav Avrom the Gertner. And Rav Avrom discovered that Rav Baruch was a tzaddik nister, a true great tzaddik, and a mystic, notwithstanding his young and tender age. There was an incident which caused Rav Baruch to want to do tshuva because he thought there was a problem with his in the aspect of Shmirat Shabbos, and he decided to make it good by greater Torah study and more ardent devotion to davening. 6 weeks passed. Baruch spent his days and nights studying intensively. And knowing himself to be alone in the orchard, he gave free play to a sweet voice, singing unrestrainedly and filling the orchard with his tuneful melodies. He was unaware of the fact that Avrom the gardener, who was the owner of the orchard, used to often come into the orchard unobserved, and keeping himself hidden, he would listen for hours to Baruch's enthusiastic way of learning. Then he would stealthily go away. Avrom saw that Baruch was no ordinary student, but could indeed be classed among the greatest Talmidei Chachamim, among the greatest Torah scholars. The period of waiting for the fruit to ripen had passed, and the time for picking the fruit off the trees had now come. Baruch could now no longer enjoy the same peaceful atmosphere in the orchard as he had up until that point, for now he wasn't alone anymore. Both partners Avrom and Azriel, with their wives and families, and even some outsiders, had come along to the orchard. All were eager to start on the job. Ladders were set up against the trees, and the fruit was placed in baskets, which were loaded onto wagons for taking into town. The orchard became noisy and clamorous. Baruch was now as busy as everybody, picking and packing the fruit. He presented a fine figure with his attractive personality and well-developed figure. He was broad-shouldered, with strong muscles, tall, and with an exceedingly handsome face. His eyes in particular made a very deep impression. They were deep and clear, indicating depth and strength of character, determination, and fearlessness. One could always discern in his eyes and face a thoughtful seriousness. Baruch was gifted with a pleasant and lucid power of speech. He spoke beautifully and with a pleasant ringing voice. He also spoke a very good and fluent Polish, which came as a pleasant surprise to the several non-Jews working in the orchard, as well as to his Jewish co-workers. The picking of the fruit took about 2 to 3 weeks, during which time there came to the orchard a number of distinguished visitors. These were the squire owner of the orchard and his family, including his son, his daughter, and his wife. They came to offer their goods to the two Jewish partners who had rented the orchard from them, paying a good price for it. The squire showed his big-heartedness by ordering a basket of fruit to be packed for him, and for which he insisted on paying, despite the request of the partners that he accepted as a gift. It was on the occasion of this visit that the attention of these distinguished guests was drawn to Baruch. The squire could not refrain from admiring Baruch's beautiful physique, his unusually impressive face, and his penetrating, intelligent eyes. When he learned that Baruch could speak a fine and fluent Polish, he could absolutely find no end to his admiration of him. He was greatly interested in him and wanted to know all the details of his life, especially when he heard that Baruch had all the time been watchman at the orchard. The squire introduced Baruch to his children, intimating that he was a most remarkable young man. Baruch soon noticed that all of the squire's family were interested in him. He noticed particularly that this sent the blood rushing to his cheeks. That the squire's daughter was still a young lady did not take her eyes off him. And you actually spend the nights alone in the orchard? She asked Baruch. Baruch answered with a nod of his head, obviously not wishing to become involved in conversation with the squire's daughter. He replied readily, however, to the questions put him by the squire and his son. This the young lady put down to his shyness and to his being unaccustomed to speaking to young ladies, and so she did not trouble him with any more questions, leaving the conversation to her father and brother. The next day the squire and his family again came to the orchard, and this time they all showed unmistakably that their main interest was centered on Baruch. Baruch was greatly astonished, no less than the two partners of Roman Nazriel. "You will certainly have to come up and visit us," the squire said to Baruch. "In my castle we shall have a better opportunity to chat." The young squire nodded his head approvingly. He was also interested in Baruch. His sister stood by smiling, but saying nothing. Baruch made no reply to the invitation of the squire. The only acknowledgement he gave was a vague nod of his head, but he remained silent. The squire and his family took their leave, and Baruch went on with his work, trying to forget all that had happened that day. During the day, Baruch was busy with the others who were engaged in picking the fruit off the trees. In the evening, when everybody returned to town, Baruch remained alone in the orchard. As always, he devoted this time to learning Torah and Avodas Hashem, worshipping the Almighty. One evening, when Baruch was alone in the orchard, someone suddenly appeared in the doorway of his hut. Baruch turned to see who it was, and to his great astonishment, he saw it was none other than the young squire. The young squire greeted him with a hearty good evening and said that his father had sent him to invite Baruch to their castle. "We all feel that you are lonely in the orchard," he said. "We would like you to come and spend the evening with us." Baruch hesitated. He tried to find some excuse for declining the invitation, feeling that it would lead to no good. "I am alone in the orchard," Baruch excused himself. "It is therefore not possible for me to go away and leave it unwatched." Young squire departed. Baruch hoped that the matter would end there. But before long, there he was back again, accompanied by two footmen with several huge dogs at their heels. "See, my friend, they will guard the orchard for you in your absence while you are spending the time with us," the young squire said. Baruch was greatly embarrassed. The friendship of the squire and his family was most unwelcome to him, and he would gladly have refused their invitation as far as he himself was concerned. But knowing the cruel whims of these squires, and that his refusal might hurt others, in particular his employers, and maybe other fellow Jews around Loshna, Baruch decided to go with the young squire. Here was a case where he could not study his own feelings in the matter. In interest of his fellow Jews, he had to forego on his own feelings because that stood higher than all else. He was determined, however, that he would show the squire firmness, and by not a single word show any weakness or subservience. It was up to him to uphold Jewish honor and speak and act only in the spirit of the Torah. Baruch was received at the castle with great friendship and interest. This did not please him at all. Baruch took the first opportunity of showing self-assurance when he entered the castle in not unbearing his head. He explained the reason for this in a pure Polish. He referred to the quotation, "Every breathing soul should praise the Lord," about which our sages say that with every breath of the soul, one should praise the Almighty, meaning that one should always feel oneself in the presence of the Almighty. Therefore, how could a Jew remain, even for one moment, with an uncovered head? Baruch's boldness and consistency, and the clear and beautiful manner in which he explained the whole matter, made a deep impression upon the squire and his family. It was perhaps the first time that they had heard such proud and decisive speech from a Jew. The idea was strange both to the squire as well as to his family, that a Jew could be anything other than subservient and trembling, always ready to kiss the hands of the cruel squires. Where does such courage and pride come to this ordinary Jewish youth? A mere watchman. And where did he acquire such wisdom and knowledge? The squire reached such a high degree of respect for Baruch that he not only acknowledged that Baruch was right in keeping his head covered, but ordered his own hat to be brought, and he too covered his head. Baruch entered into a lengthy explanation as to why he was determined to adhere strictly to every Jewish custom. At the same time, he made it clear to the squire how unfair it would be for anyone to use his power to interfere with another's way of life and belief. The squire and his family sat listening to Baruch spellbound. They heard and could not cease wondering as he quoted saying after saying of the sages, which he translated into Polish and explained so simply and beautifully. The conversation was indeed of a lofty nature. Baruch, for the first time, showed his great wisdom and knowledge. He contrasted to them the two separate worlds, the world of materialism, which is the non-Jewish world, and the spiritual world, which is the Jewish world. The squire positively swallowed each word as it came from Baruch's lips, and Baruch began to feel more at ease. He felt that the tone he had struck would save him from a possible scheme that the squire had in mind when he invited him to his castle. The squire's children, however, were apparently not at all pleased with the turn the conversation had taken. They would have preferred it to have been on lighter subjects. "These matters should really be discussed in the presence of a priest," they said, and both the son and daughter together added, "Father is very interested in all these things, but we will come to see you in the orchard tomorrow evening, and we can amuse ourselves in a very different way." Baruch blushed. He foresaw the danger that a prolonged friendship with the squire's children would entail, and to which he was greatly averse. He wanted to put an end to this friendship, in which he had no interest whatsoever. His mind was already busy trying to think how he could avoid this meeting. The squire expressed his regret that he had not known of Baruch right through the summer when he was at the orchard. He could have befriended him. Now it was already the end of the summer. Baruch, on the other hand, was delighted that they had made each other's acquaintance at the end of the summer, for he would be leaving the orchard in a few days' time. Baruch was now invited to the dining room, where the table was set with all sorts of delicacies, all of a kind that a Jew might be permitted to eat at the table of a non-Jew. Baruch, nevertheless, had decided that he would not partake of anything, and would simply show them that he had the will and determination not to be put to any test. Baruch was just getting ready to make an excuse and explanation for his not eating with them when the air was rent with a terrible scream of a young child. It was the squire's youngest child who had just scalded itself with a pan of boiling water. Everyone in the house ran around seeing how best to help in the emergency. Baruch, feeling that he might be in the way, or at any rate, feeling that no one was likely to want to be bothered with him under the circumstances, took the opportunity of slipping quietly away to the orchard. There he found the two footmen and the dogs, who now returned to the castle. That night, Baruch could not sleep. He had plenty to think about. His mind could not rest. What was to happen in the evening when the squire's children would be calling on him in the orchard? He started reciting some tillim, and his voice reverberated throughout the orchard. Next day, the two partners of Roman Azriel, together with all the others, came to the orchard to continue with the work of picking the fruit from the trees. As usual, Baruch lent a willing hand to the work. News was brought about from the castle that the young child of squire, who had scalded herself the previous evening, had died. Baruch felt a pain in his heart, as if it had somehow been a matter connected with himself. He did not, however, say a word of what he knew of the incident. The day passed, and Baruch began to experience a feeling of unrest. He felt that the squire's children would feel they had to keep their appointment with him, despite the tragic death of the child. What could he discuss with them? How was he to conduct himself with them? The old squire was at least a serious person, and he made an impression upon him. His children, however, were molded of a different clay. No good could possibly come of their visit. Just before nightfall, Baruch, as usual, went into town for the evening services. He had decided to have an earnest talk with Avram. He told him of all that had taken place. "I've come to the conclusion that I dare not sleep in the orchard anymore," said Baruch. "You will have to find someone else to take my place." Avram listened carefully and agreed to Baruch's suggestion, although he did not feel at all sure that the squire's children would really come as they had promised. That night, Baruch did not return to the orchard. Avram and Azriel went instead to watch the orchard. Avram did not tell his partner what Baruch had told him. He only told him that Baruch did not feel well enough to watch the orchard that night. Avram had to admit that Baruch's fears were justified, for sure enough, the squire's children turned up, but on seeing that Baruch was not there, they went home in disappointment. On the following day, Baruch came to work at the orchard, the same as his co-workers, but again he returned with them to town for the night. He was not going to sleep at the orchard anymore. In any case, it was now a matter only of a few more days, and the work at the orchard would be completed. It was already the latter part of the month of Elul. Rosh Hashanah was drawing near. When the work in the orchard was finished, Baruch was paid by the two partners, and he again settled down to study in the Beis HaMedrash. He had saved enough money to support himself for some time. He needed so little to keep himself. He generally fasted on Mondays and Thursdays, and ate very little on the other days of the week. Only on Shabbos did he permit himself a little of something extra. The main thing was to sit and study. Now that he was provided with his immediate needs, Baruch studied not only the Gemara and response to Shiloh Sechuvis, but also books on Jewish ethics. The Yom Neroim had passed. Winter began to draw near with its long nights. Baruch now had months of unbroken days and nights for study, and he did indeed devote himself completely to Limudat Torah, to the study of Torah, with all the ardor of his young soul. As Baruch sat in the Beis HaMedrash during the long nights, practically alone, he could still pretend to be quite an ordinary youth, who was in no way exceptional other than his having made the Beis HaMedrash his home. There was no one to take any particular notice of him, and this was just what he wanted. On one of these nights, there came to the Beis HaMedrash one of his former employers. It was Avram the Gertner, Avram the Gardener. Baruch was so engrossed in his studies that he did not notice the visitor until Avram spoke to him. They talked for a while, and then Avram said, "I always had my eye on you. Until now, I did not want you to know that I had discovered your secret, that you are not an ordinary youth, and you are not the simple young man that you pretend to be. More than once, I hid in the orchard and listened to you as you sang out in your studies. I have not disclosed your secret to anyone. The time has come, however, for me to tell you that I know who you are. I have therefore come to you now to ask if you will arrange a fixed time when we can study together. I have a special request to make of you, which is that we study together the section of Shulchan Aruch called Choshen Mishpat." For a while, Baruch remained silent. He did not know what to reply to his former employer, Avram the Gardener. Avram noticed Baruch's indecision, and so he sat down near him and began to recite a particularly difficult passage in the Gemara. He made new points. He mentioned some chidushim which he had learned from his old teacher, Avram Zev of Beshenkovich. Baruch listened to these new points, which he heard for the first time, and was positively enthralled. Avram himself was a very learned man, and could repeat all he had learned from his old teacher, who was famous for his brilliant scholarship. Avram was well known for his great Talmudical learning, and he used to conduct a shiur in the Beis HaMedrash of Reb Kaddish the Yosim in Lozhne. Men who had the Gemara at their fingertips used to attend the shir. Avram distinguished himself not only by the depth and sharpness of his mind, but also by his fine orderliness and clarity of thought. He began a discourse on the Masechta, the Talmudic tractate, relating to sacrifices, which was new to Baruch, as Baruch had concentrated on the order of Nezikin. Baruch listened spellbound. He could see that in Avraham he would not only have a wonderful companion, but also reap the benefit of all he, Avraham, had learned from his old teacher, Rabbi Avraham Zev, the Ilui of Bashenkovich, the prodigy of Bashenkovich. While Avraham continued with his Talmudic discourse, his face was lit up with a radiance which reminded Baruch of his own father's radiant face when he too used to study Torah. This resemblance somehow drew him nearer to Avraham, and he felt that he need no longer hide anything from him. Incidentally, Avraham promised Baruch he would keep a secret just as long as Baruch desired. Throughout the entire winter, the two of them studied together during the long nights. They both derived much pleasure from their joint study. And as for Baruch, the winter could have lasted a lifetime as far as he was concerned, for he had still some of his saved up money with which to support himself, and he had a companion and teacher with whom to study. The month of Nisan came, and with its coming, all the Jews of Lozhne began to make preparations for Pesach. The bakeries began their work of baking matzahs, and the whole town was astir with hurry and bustle. Everybody was busy. The teachers closed their classes, scholars slackened in their studies, and all set about preparing for the coming Yontif. Avraham, for the same reason, stopped coming to Baruch nightly as he had until then. "The holy festival of Pesach is approaching," said Avraham to Baruch. "All the time I did not invite you to my house to eat at my table, as I knew you would rather not. But Pesach is a different matter. Pesach has to be celebrated in a proper manner, and I want you so very much to spend it with me at my house. You will be a most welcome guest." For a few nights, Avraham and Baruch did not see each other. A few days before Pesach, Avraham came into the Beis HaMedrash to remind Baruch that he expected him for the Siddurim and for the entire Yontif. But Baruch was nowhere to be found. Baruch was no more in the Beis HaMedrash. Baruch had disappeared. Apparently, he did not wish to accept Avraham's invitation. Yet, at the same time, he did not like to refuse his friend and teacher Avraham. So he just disappeared without leaving any trace behind him. Avraham was terribly upset about Baruch's disappearance. But what could he do about it? He had no idea where to look for him. And what happened to Baruch? Well, Baruch, who had heard so much about the great Rabbi Avraham Zev of Bashenkovich, suddenly felt an irresistible urge to go to Bashenkovich and become a Talmud of this great Talmud Chochem. The road from Lozhne to Bashenkovich led through Dobromzhel, the first townlet where Baruch had spent some time soon after leaving his father's house in Vitebsk. Baruch had some remarkable memories of Dobromzhel and the people with whom he had become acquainted there. It was just before Pesach when he came to Dobromzhel for the first time. Now again, here he was in Dobromzhel for Pesach. And so he went to the same person with whom he had spent Pesach on that occasion, and who welcomed him wholeheartedly as before. Baruch remembered very clearly his first meeting with him. Baruch was then but a lad of 14, who had settled down to study in the Beis HaMedrash, determined not to accept help from anybody, and as a result he suffered hunger. One day, a man whom he had several times noticed in the Beis HaMedrash came up to him. He did not know who he was or what was his name. The stranger greeted him very warmly and said, "My name is Eliezer Reuven. I am a smith, and have a smithy on the outskirts of the town, on the road leading to Lozhna. I live nearby, and could do with someone to help me in my smithy. If you feel you would care for such a job, I would provide you with food and drink, and a place to sleep." Baruch was overjoyed. This was exactly what he wanted. He was prepared to do the hardest work so long as he could earn his own piece of bread without recourse to anyone's help. And so it was that Baruch, as a young lad of 14, spent time in the Brumjil at the house of Rabbi Elazar Ruvain the smithy. More about that stay in the next installment, Im Yirtzeh Hashem.